It's College Bowl time. There's big money in college football, but the players don't get paid. The idea of amateur athletics may sound idealistic, but Rick Tallender thinks that amateurism in college football is an illusion that's led to exploitation, corruption, and greed in the game. Tallender has covered college sports for Sports Illustrated. He's also had firsthand experience, having played football for Northwestern. Tallender has a new book about corruption in college football called The 100-Yard Lie. Nevertheless, I asked him if he's looking forward to the bowl games.
It isn't really hard for me to have a lot of enthusiasm because the games, the contests themselves, are still spectacular. They're tremendous TV fodder. A football field is a great TV studio, and our instant replay and the way that the TV cameramen and the producers capture the events is just is great. But it's hard for me also knowing the underlying hypocrisies of big-time college football. That part of it is hard also.
Well, you find the whole notion of amateurism in college football absurd, and you think that the universities are exploiting the athletes because the colleges make money and the athletes are supposed to not accept money for the sport. Why do you think amateurism is absurd?
Well, amateurism is absurd not just as it applies to big-time college football or basketball, but it's absurd as a notion. All you have to do is go back and examine its historic roots. It began in Victorian England as a way to keep the classes, the lower classes, from mingling with the upper classes. Victorian England claimed that they were lifting this notion from the ancient Greeks, from the ancient Olympic ideal. Well, I went back and talked with some Greek scholars and those who have written about the ancient Olympics. And there never was any such concept of amateurism. In fact, the ancient Greeks would have laughed at the notion of amateurism. If you won an Olympic event back in, say, 400 BC, you were set up with so much riches and so many things of great value that you were set for life. And that's the way they felt anyone who was good at anything should be rewarded. There's nothing evil about money. What is evil is exploitation and hypocrisy.
Just to give us an example of how much money is involved in college football, what are the revenues from the bowl games that are coming up?
Well, the bowl game revenue continues to climb. A few years ago, it was $500,000, then $1 million, then $2 million, then $3 million, then $4 million. We're up to $5 million, over $5 million, almost $6 million for the Rose Bowl, and a little bit less for the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, and games like that. The school doesn't keep that money. The athletic department keeps it, and they will then use that for whatever purposes they may feel are needed to keep their program going. But that kind of money, say you're a wide receiver, say you're 19 years old, a sophomore, you drop a pass in the last game of the season, which prevents you then from going to the Rose Bowl or prevents you from going to, say, the Orange Bowl, you know that by dropping that pass, you have cost your athletic department millions of dollars. What kind of pressure is that to put on a kid who supposedly is participating in an extracurricular activity? I think it's crazy. And beyond the bowl revenue, what about the money now that the big TV networks have thrown at college sports? CBS recently signed the NCAA Final 64-team basketball tournament for $1 billion for 7 years. Suppose there are 8 or 9 players on a basketball team that is going, which typically would be how many you would use, and they play 6 games and make it to the final, the championship, and they win the championship, they will have brought in over $15 million to their athletic department, and they will have received nothing for it. And in fact, quite often they will have been torn away from school, from studies, from final exams. It's really cockeyed. I bring up one other example. 15-year-old Monica Seles, the tennis player, she's a pro. It doesn't seem to bother anybody. She has made hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. That doesn't bother anyone. There's now a 13-year-old female tennis player getting ready to join the women's tennis tour. That doesn't bother anybody either, but somehow it bothers us when 21, 22-year-old football players even think about making money.
When you were a college player, what effects did it have on you to know that you not only weren't going to get paid for the sport, but according to NCAA guidelines, you couldn't have a job during the school year?
Well, again, it makes you think, do these people know who we are? Do they really care about us, or are they just trying to promote a system that benefits them? You know, I would submit now that there really isn't time during the season or to the school year for a football player to have a part-time job because it's really a full-time job in and of itself. It's very easy to put in 40 or 50 60 hours a week on football during the season. And then there's post season training and then spring practice. And then, of course, all summer long, you better be staying in shape, lifting weights and running and just generally working on the skills that are needed so that you can participate in the fall. But when I was in school, I remember being hungry. I was one of these skinny defensive backs who wanted food all the time. It seemed like I could eat about 8,000 calories a day. In fact, I know I could, and gain maybe a quarter of a pound. And then I'd play a game and lose 3 or 4 pounds. So I took a part-time job as a pizza delivery boy so that I could eat pizza. That was one of the deals. You got 50 cents for each pizza that you delivered, and plus you could eat all the pizza and hamburgers and make yourself milkshakes while you're waiting around for the next order to come in. That was in direct violation of NCAA rules. Didn't matter to me at all because I knew then, as at age 18 and 19, that they were frauds. And I think it's still something that bothers me to see adults using kids. And that's why at one point in my book, I say this is akin to child abuse, and people have jumped all over me for that. I stand by it completely. It is very offensive to me when adults do things to kids, and even if these are big, strapping young men, they're still kids and that they are pawns to authority, and that just bothers me.
What are some of the ways that players today get around the rules that prevent them from earning money for playing football and from having jobs during the school year?
Well, they find all sorts of ways of giving you money. You can have fraudulent jobs in the summertime. Players also will get free cars that will be hidden behind ownership by one of their parents or an uncle or an aunt. There's all sorts of ways to get money, but the trouble is you have to do it in a fraudulent manner. It means that you have already acquiesced and far from being an ethical, upstanding person and learning the things that I think our institutions of higher education should be teaching you, you've already given up and said, yeah, I'm a con, the system is corrupt, I'm going to be corrupt, that's the only way I can possibly compete with it. So by the time these guys get to the NFL, you've got some full-blown mercenaries and greedy, money-grubbing players who've been taught this through the college system.
Well, you think that it's not only the hypocritical approach to amateurism that's creating mercenaries and corrupt values, but you think the coaches have something to do with it, too, and the values that they bring to their training.
Yes, I do. And I think that coaches are, in the classic sense, caught between a rock and a hard place. If they say that they want to teach these athletes to become better men, to learn how to act properly in the real world, to educate them with values that are ones that can carry them through life to make them better people, that simply isn't in keeping with what they really have to do, what their real job description is. And you see it again and again. Their job description is win. It doesn't matter how you do it. It doesn't matter who you do it with, but you'd better win. Don Morton was just fired at Wisconsin in the third year of a five-year contract, not because he had done anything corrupt or there was any problem with any of his players. He seemed to have run a very clean program, but because he wasn't winning. It happened. I can't even count all the teams where that happens. And yet a coach that is a bad guy and teaches sort of antisocial behavior or tolerates it and yet wins, his contract will be renewed again and again.
You end your new book with some suggestions for change, and your major suggestion is to start a new league, an age group league, that would be college age players, but they wouldn't be in college.
Right. You could be in college. You could, if you found that you had the time and the inclination, you could go to class the way a normal student would. So what I'm submitting we do is have a league that would be virtually identical to what we have right now. You wouldn't know the difference. There would be no need for realignment. There would be no need for changing the names of the teams, the colors of the teams, or anything. You would still have the Illinois Fighting Illini, the Oklahoma Sooners, the USC Trojans, University of Florida Gators, and they would wear the same colors, play in the same stadiums, but they would be players age 18 to 22 in this age group league. They would participate in the revenue that they bring in. They would receive a year of redeemable scholarship for every year that they play in this league while they're housed on this campus, and they can use that scholarship any time during their lives. So they could come back at age 50 or 60 or 70 or 23 and be a real full-time student and get that degree or that education that they now will have the time and the inclination to get.
You've been covering college football for Sports Illustrated. How much longer are you going to cover the game, given that you're very cynical about the way it's being run now?
Well, I don't want to cover college football at all. In fact, I took myself off the beat. I talked with the editors in New York. We had a meeting. They were very understanding of my problems. And I now am writing about the NBA and about the NFL. At least, you know, it's up front. That's play for pay. I'm writing profiles of athletes, but I don't want to write about college football itself or college basketball, really, because I just feel that this is my form of protest so that we can do something that is equitable.
You're very cynical right now about college football. Are you going to watch the bowl games anyways?
I'll watch a couple of them. I have to keep my eye on it as sort of the conscience of the sport.
Okay. Thanks a lot for talking with us.
Okay. Well, thank you, Terry.